the need for people to back up their data personally was made sufficiently clear to lab users. I mean, I guess.
They didn't miss it.
Right, as long as she misses, then that's fine. I'm just thinking, you know, sometimes when there's a process error like that, you think, oh, then there's something we should change, like make the sign in bigger red letters. But I think in our case, I don't think there's anything more we can do, really.
No.
So. Well, I doubt anybody will do that again, because that'll get around.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got the mailing list set up now, isn't there? So everyone should know about it now.
Yeah, there was a mailing list before. They just revived that, right?
Frank went through it, deleted the people that were gone or whatever, and replaced them. So the list is now updated.
Yeah, so everyone on that list has now been reminded. Yeah, don't store anything sensitive on. Yeah, don't store anything you care about on the machines. So. Yeah, I mean, I did do hard drive check and a memory check, and it says there's no problems, but something caused it to go wrong in the first place. So we don't know. We'll just fingers crossed and hope it is just a software thing that we can just fix like that, and that'll be it.
Yeah. So how long does this put you back for? Is it, how much disruption does this cause? Is this a day, 2 days?
Yeah. 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 I mean, one we'll try and get done today. Yeah, get Windows back on there, try and get Camtasia on there, and get that tested out, and then that'll be. I think that's everything we need before you can start running the experiments, isn't it?
So.
Yeah.
Right. Unfortunate, but it sounds like you guys are well placed for dealing with it, so better than me.
Yeah. I did manage to get things working on Monday, so everything went down like on Tuesday morning. So I managed to get everything working on the on Monday to show that the JCT was actually working, collaborating between the two machines. I didn't have the eye tracker stuff working because it was just me running around the lab. So I'll have to, once it's reinstalled, have to actually do a proper, proper pilot and. Yeah. But it looks like it was doing all the calibration and drift correction things that Ellen was wanting on it. So, so I don't think there's anything to add to the software for that part. Don't think so. Doesn't sound familiar.
Quite amusing to look at. So I'll see if she'd be willing to.
Well, I did meet someone from another project of yours on Wednesday evening.
Who's that?
Heidi.
Oh yeah, Heidi.
Gesture.
Oh yeah, she's good. Yeah. You guys might actually have something in common because she does stuff in video coding and gesture.
Yeah.
And autism. So. Right, what am I writing? Okay. No, I will actually give the option, but it sounds like the kind of thing where, it's quite useful when you're at that stage to see the different kinds of technologies people use.
Yeah. Yeah, so try and get Camtasia up and running so I can try it out when we've got her come in. And we'll just sort of do a run through a proper pilot just so I can see. Yep. Yeah, I'll make sure they can actually pick up the audio signal as well. But it should be the audio signal should be coming out the speakers once it's set up properly. So that should make that slightly easier. Yeah. But yeah, so but fortunately the speakers are on the monitors inside the room. So long as, and what I've done, I've just got it set up so the whatever the asterisk sound is in Windows is what gets played. So you can just change the sound to whatever you like just through the Windows control panel. Yeah. So I had that running over the weekend. So last week I tried it with a 1 kilohertz sound, and it could detect it, but it wasn't very clear. Did it with 10 kilohertz, and it's just really clear. You can tell exactly where the beep is now. So yeah. So it's just a matter of you basically just play a 10 kilohertz sound over the speech, and then just compare the two signals basically. So I've got a little script for doing it. So. Yeah, not a problem. Yeah, the one in just install should have that now. We'll double check when we install on software on the eye tracking machines, but yeah, it should be updated with that now. So. Yeah, so we've got like a big circle with a white circle in the middle of it for an eye, and we've got like a rectangle with two like rectangle buttons on it for a mouse. So. Oh no, they're the same size as the original blobs basically. I think the mouse is slightly bigger, but it's not hugely bigger. So. Yeah, and if it gets to be a problem in the pilot, I can easily reduce the size of whatever. That's not too hard. So. Yeah. Yeah. I'll try.
Yes, he's produced another version that doesn't have the overlap.
Oh, yes.
The
Okay.
collision, so the polygon kind of delete.
Oh, that's good.
Marlowe has discovered something strange about the orientation of parallelograms from when it was constructed to when it appears in the actual task. But I think that might be something to do with the original configuration and the parts that weren't the same across the two. So I'll check that out to see if it really is a problem or not. And
Okay.
basically, the parallelogram was appearing in a sort of as a mirror image of what it was like in the model builder.
Really?
Just totally flipped in a mirror image, not rotated, so it wasn't anything to do with rotation. It
Just
was,
the parallelogram.
yeah, just the parallelogram. So not entirely sure. It must be some way of how the vertices were described or defined in one way compared to something else.
Right, okay, so your job in this is to ensure that it actually is a bug and then pass it to Joe?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, this geometry stuff is really tricky if you don't do the folded boxes stuff in your head well, so I can imagine.
Well.
Because I could get it backwards easily, so it is just this really adventure.
The other thing we've done is looked at, not for this current experiment, but for future when we've config can output the vertex points for creating the actual polygons in the first place. Because the model builder assumes that there's an existing set of
So you can do an xfig, export them as SVG, and you just get a comma, you just get a list of xy coordinates, and then I've just written a little script that turns those xy coordinates into a part.
Yeah, so this falls down completely if Nijmegen can't run xfig.
Well, the thing is, it's SVG, so long as I've got something that will output SVG. Yeah. So I'll have a look at that. But there must be plenty of Windows things for that like output SVG. I know Adobe and things have packages that do it, but obviously they're like a few hundred pounds.
Yeah.
I'd be very surprised if there wasn't a free package for doing it. I have a feeling that the was it Amaya, the W3C browser does it. I have a feeling that can actually edit SVG files. Yeah.
You know, let them say they've got a problem before you have to spend time trying to figure out what to do it.
Yep, fair enough.
It's an immediate problem anyway, but I thought it was worth, before Joe disappears, just checking that the model builder is not restricted to just doing the tangrams or something. So, no, it doesn't look like it's...
I can imagine there being shapes that you could construct in SVG format that would fox the model builder in some way. I don't know, because you don't have specs about what sorts of shapes are allowed, right?
No, but as long as they're solid polygons, right?
Right, it doesn't matter whether they're convex or concave in funny ways.
Well, hopefully that's not what the parallelogram problem is, because it does have angles and things.
Yeah. I created a convex part, just an xfig. It just happened to be a convex part that was what I was playing with. So it handled that fine. It didn't have any self intersections, so that might be a problem. So I have to check that. But
by self intersection, you mean?
Yeah, by a part that crosses over itself. So like a. Yeah, that sort of thing, yeah. So.
And you can rule out something like that, right? Because
well,
that's two parts.
I would consider that two parts, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some rainy day, you might want to think about. Well, I don't know.
If it becomes a.
Fix it if it
it's
not urgent now. I think this isn't important enough.
Yeah. Yeah, so for now, we'll just assume they're non-intersecting. At the moment the SVG stuff can output ones which aren't closed polygons, but once they actually turn up in the parts list, it creates a closed polygon just by linking the endpoint to the start point.
Yeah.
So as long as they're drawn well enough, it should be all right. So. Suppose let Nijmegen. Find an SVG, so find something that does SVG, and then we'll see if there's any problems.
But if they have trouble, you know, half an hour googling and helping them is probably worthwhile. I wouldn't expect them to have any trouble finding something, because JP's quite helpful with all these things.
It might be worth just checking what software they are using, because it might create output slightly different from xfig. So.
Microsoft version of SVG or something.
That I wasn't going to say. I have no idea whether they have idiosyncratic SVG output or whatever. But the track record on some of the other standards has not. There have been slightly strange things about it. So.
Yeah.
But Amaya, you know, I mean, that should be.
That should be fun. Yeah, I think it does SVG output. So I can easily double check if no main can't find anything. Yeah.
And I am just using it through a Windows bolt-on sort of piece of software.
Yeah, but that was easy enough to install, though, wasn't it? Yeah. Copy and paste the stuff out of the wiki, so. So I double checked, and when I could access the CVS from home when I was working from home last week, on Thursday, I managed to get in and just check the stuff and make sure it was all make sure I could access it. So they shouldn't have any trouble accessing it once they've got the logins. Not yet, I'm afraid. Well, once I've tried out the Camtasia stuff, obviously, if there's any problems, gotta try and fix them. If there isn't any problems, next thing I'm working on is the GDF stuff. So I've put on a DTD and a sample XML file on the wiki for the GDF. So it's based on some stuff you put on there on the GDF specification. Yeah, I mean, I changed a couple of things from your original draft. So there's no longer a separate thing for creating new parts. So I've just put a start and end time on each part. You had a thing called, I think it was mold or something you said, which is sort of to create a new part. It was an action to create a new part. But I gave each part a start time and an end time, So you can see when the parts were created. So I'm not, not sure if you want to keep them old or not. Yeah, it's just the GDF specification page on the wiki. I'm trying to put in justification for the change I made on the page. So, but I've sent it out for review, so that so anyone who is going to be using the format can have a look at it. Right. Yeah. I mean,
I think it's great to have the records, and that's really important, especially in big dispersed groups. But this is kind of a smaller group, so you know we can do things more informally where you feel the wikis are getting in the way of things.
Yeah. Well, the ones that's only this stuff. I mean, it's helpful. It was helpful for me to put it up on the wiki because I could actually think about it as I put it up and say, well, this is why I want to do things this way.
Oh, okay.
So. Yep, fair enough, fair enough.
But I'm sure it's fine, because it's just my memory of things.
Well, I'll have to get to grips with Camtasia properly.
Yeah.
To generate a little sort of introductory video, I suppose, for instructional purposes in the beginning of the experiment, so people will be able to see and sort of, you know, example movements and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, I know on Camtasia, if you've got a Camtasia project, you can have the video and audio stored separately. In which case, so we just send the Dutch team, the video and our audio, and then they can easily create their audio out of from that. Yeah. Well, one thing that Camtasia can do, you can have little videos. On the, I mean, I don't know if you've got any cameras for doing that, but you could like have videos of people clicking on the mouses and sort of, or whatever else. And you can, yeah, you can generate call outs and whatever. So. Well, yeah, I'm sure there must be a way of quitting big arrows or whatever.
suspect so, because I haven't had a reply back.
I think it's really up to us too.
Yeah, to admit it. It was just in case they had.
Is it hard? You don't want to give them the specification, you know, because that's in too highfalutin a language,
mm-hmm.
but. Children's fresh shop where there were tangrams, and my son reminded me that he hasn't been able to find his tangram set.
Oh, right, okay, you want to give that?
Well, if, not if you guys are using it.
It's not.
Do you find it helpful to have it?
Yeah, it's well. Actually, I could probably just photocopy the manual.
Oh,
so
but it's so tactile to have little metal bits. If you're using it, keep it. He's got plenty of toys. If you're not,
right.
If you're not using it, then I'll take it back.
Hopefully need it for more than another week or two anyway, so
yeah,
it's, can hold off.
It's not a worry. The lab has plenty to us.
I was looking at the complexity sort of aspect of the tangrams in that booklet. It's not quite that they just get harder, it kind of have pages of similar types.
Oh, similar types, uh-huh.
Yeah, so one page will have sort of parts that are similar to each other, and then you move over to a different almost type of design style.
Yeah.
So it's not quite as progressive in complexity.
Right. So how are you
going to
get your complexity ratings? Google. Is there a big Tangram community that ranks these things? Like, you know, that's just one booklet that came with one set of Tangrams.
You never know what's
or is it obvious, like, when you look at these things?
Well, I'm hoping the Dutch input will allow us to sort of have a rough idea of what was suitable complexity
for
the task.
Right, that still won't tell you. Well, how many tangrams are there that they're using? 15 or something? No,
not even that. Of this relevant type to what we're wanting to use, probably 3. Generate 16 in total.
So that's not going to tell you anything about relative complexity. That's just going to tell you where in the span you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
You still need some kind of scale for these things.
Yeah.
If you look at them, do you just know?
No.
No.
Well, I don't. I'm not.
What about him?
No, I'm afraid not.
Can you tell just by looking at these how hard people are? No.
I wouldn't know. No. That's a psychology thing, how hard they are.
See if there are some sort of ranking sites.
Who in psychology already uses tangrams that's still around? People have been using tangrams for ages, so there must be somebody with a folk wisdom you can contact.
I'll try and find out. I don't know offhand.
Right.
So.
I only know ancient papers, so like late 80s. Do people still use tangrams?
I've not encountered.
So we're very old-fashioned.
Maybe they just don't use anything like that.
Well, it was stuff in the 70s and the 80s, right?
So I'm not sure if anything's happened
since then. Right. The old tasks are the best. So I don't know what that word means. Sorry, that was, I think, a big diversion. And we were talking about what you were going to do next after all this stuff was up. I was going to look at the GDFs. Is the rest of what you're to do with that software fairly clear? Because this is about the analysis.
Yeah, yes.
You only need Robin, right?
Yeah, yes. I'll just be working with Robin on what analysis we need to get out of the GDF format. So I'm going to basically, I've got the Jest Analyzer has got the basis for a ASCII to GDF. Converter. So what I've got to do is actually create an output, a GDF output part to it, because the moment any output's the video, but it does have internal structures which will make it easy to do the XML. So that's what I've got to look at. And then once I've done that, I can look at the whatever analysis we need to get done out of the GDF.
You know, well,
Yeah.
Based on an experiment that had blocks, a model, blocks, parts, and then an area where people had to build, you know, replicate the model out of parts.
Yeah.
Just one person at a time, of course, but it did involve eye movements and monitoring where they're looking compared to the eye movements. And
oh yeah, who was that then?
Ballard.
Okay.
Back in 92.
Are they still in the business?
Yes, I think so.
Where are they?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, they might have a focus on the complexity, right?
Yeah.
So, I need to stop that one. Maybe.
So, it should
well,
still
it is
be
really
well.
is it a paper you can get?
That's what I'll have to try and find out. So.
Well, they're still doing for library loans and stuff. So.
If not, the National Library.
So did we think next week that's what we're going to talk about? Because we don't want to ask her on ahead of time if she wants to come along for a discussion about it.
She's not here next week anyway.
Oh, well, that's fine then.
It's next Wednesday or Thursday before she's back.
Okay. Oh yeah, because her stuff is getting blocked off the mailing list because she's not mailing from her normal account.
Oh, is that what? Yeah, she's got a Yahoo account or something.
Yeah,
forwarded
and I can't figure out any way to just approve messages from her. Subscribing at that account.
Oh well, if things haven't been getting through well.
There's only one message so far. It didn't say much.
I think that's it. I'll get working on the Camtasia stuff this week, and then. So once we've got some idea about what analysis you want out of this, I can think about whether the GDF's got everything we need in it, and yeah, what analysis we can pull out of it.
There's the provisional list of what we need on the wiki anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll double check the GDF specification against that, just to make sure it's got everything you say you say you need from that.
I'm not going to have views on this anyway. What I'm really worried about is making sure that there's no big surprises for Ellen and JP. You know, when they suddenly discover that they're assuming some analysis is in there and we didn't put it in. You know, because now is the time for us to be figuring out what we want out of that data. And
yeah.
Getting it right to start, or getting JP to write the one-dimensional analysis that we used.
Yeah, because I mean, we've got all the data in the ASCII format at the moment, and it's just a matter of what data do we need to pull out of that into the GDF so we can actually do the proper analysis. Because I think all the analysis is going to be run off the GDF format, because we've decided that if we're looking at dynamic regions and whatever else, it has to be GDF. Yeah, which is why we have to do it off the GDF as opposed to the EDF format. So. Yeah. So the GDF, it's got the stuff from the EDF, such as the ASCII file, from things like the mouse movements and things like that.
Yeah,
and then and then on top of that, GDF will also have information such as right at this point in time they were looking at the new parts area, or they were looking at the target. Yeah. So the idea is the GDS is going to have that sort of information in it, and then also because it's an XML file, we can then do XSLT or whatever onto it to get extract whatever bits of data you need for, yeah, for whichever bits of analysis you're trying to do for it. So.
I'm beginning to think that this is quite a good idea because I worry about that thing stuck to bones forever. Much more than the other way around, right?
I think according to the latest documentation, you're down for 5% of your 15 months on this project or something.
What documentation?
Some JAS report.
Oh, okay.
Officially.
Well, it doesn't actually make its way into its my salary.
Into reality. As well.
I happen to just, you know, like working. Keeps me running the childcare.
See, it's better than that, is it right? Okay. Doing thing exciting family wise last week then.
Last week was interesting. So, well, one of the highlights family wise was going to Arcachon, which is this huge sand dune on the southwest coast of France. So it's like, I can't remember how, I'm not very good with measurements, but anyway, my husband says it's the biggest sand dune in the world. So you climb up on this flight of steps and then sort of put water on top of the sand dune.
they put steps up over a sand dune.
Yeah, well, I'm not always worried about these things because it's amazing how much sand the small children can shift.
So it's like standing on it.
Yeah, well, or big eyes, right? You know, so you know, in the UK, you don't go on sand dunes, right? Because there won't be any sand dunes left if you do. There doesn't seem to be quite so many people there, but you still would have thought that they would really want people standing on the top of it, unless they combine with great big bulldozers.
Yeah, well, in the middle of the night, do they kind of shuffle it back up?
We don't know how this works. So, but anyway, it was quite fun. We did the very French thing, so it was just the French countryside. They didn't have anything except wine and ducks.
Wine and ducks, right?
Yeah. I don't eat duck, so I stuck to the wine. You know,
no cheese as well.
Oh, no cheese, yeah. And I brought in some walnut oil. But it's good, you know, markets open in the morning, everything closes between 12 and 3, no sense trying to do anything, which suits
proper
me
siesta.
So, you know, we actually went to the